Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
Johnson wants to meet with the media. The lawyers are asking for this. So maybe because of the pressure now coming from the judiciary or from the association of the lawyers, maybe this will make the military to name their counsel.
Guinea's military junta plans to meet the media for consultations Monday.
To express yourself in democracy, we have to speak out and we have to be on the street. That we will continue. That's why we are calling for the next rally on the Wednesday, 29 of September.
A leading opposition figure in the Democratic Republic of Congo plans to organize fresh protests to demand electoral reforms this week.
The European Union is right now is heavily engaged in sanctioning countries and heads of state or governments that engage in human rights violations and corruption. And unfortunately, we have both ongoing there right now.
And a Washington, D.C. based human rights group petitions the International Criminal Court, or ICC, to investigate human rights violations in Nigeria. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Guinea, the military junta plans to meet members of the media for consultations Monday. It follows a series of meetings between leaders of the junta and separate organizations, including political parties, business leaders, and civil society and religious groups in the West African country. Meanwhile, regional leaders from the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, including Guinean President Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo and Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara, held talks with the junta and former President Alpha Conde. The two leaders were in Guinea to convey a decision by ECOWAS following its recent extraordinary summit held in the Guinean capital, Accra. ECOWAS, which has a policy of zero tolerance for the forceful overthrow of a constitutionally elected government, suspended Guinea's membership. It also demanded a quick return to constitutional rule within 6 months. For the latest development, I reach Aziz Ba, an independent journalist based in the Guinean capital, Conakry.
Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya has invited all the media in Guinea, Conakry, to meet on Monday, starting from 10 a.m. I definitely be present in this meeting. The meeting, actually, according to Doumbouya's spokesman, the meeting is about to continue the consultation between the media and the new military juntas. But this will be the first time where a military junta want to consult to the media. For me, I will say it's either a threat to the media or a way of corrupting the media. During the past government, there was no press freedom. At least press freedom was like 10-15%. I remember whenever we interview people, they see them on international television, the next day police will go and arrest them. But let's wait and see what questions or how it's going to happen.
Did he give any reasons why the junta wants to meet all journalists? Because I understand there are some supporters of the junta who are calling on the journalists to support the military junta.
He did say that the meeting is just a consultation. But what are they going to consult the media? That's the question mark. I remember yesterday, during the arrival of the ECOWAS leaders, President of Ivory Coast, Ouattara and Nana Akufo, there was a press officer, a lady, who said to us, of which I recorded, he said, "You, the media, you need to support us. You don't just need to go write something or talk to the international media about certain things. This will discredit the revolution." So I just look at her. I said, "Madam, this is not our job. Our job, our duty actually, is to tell the world exactly what is happening in our country."
How did the meeting between the military junta and ECOWAS officials go?
We say the meeting went well between them, although they are all part and parcel of the same game, like President of Ivory Coast, Ouattara, who's also going for third term. Although actually we are trying to avoid the media, some of our questions, I remember I tried to ask the Ghanaian president, Mr. Nana Akufo, I was trying to ask him, although he ignored the question, Mr. President, why are you here with President Ouattara, who is also going for third term? So what message do you have for the juntas? You know, ideally insisted, but there was no response. So another French journalist tried to change the question and ask him, and then he said, no, we are here to talk to the juntas to make sure that they have election very soon, peaceful and transparent election. And then immediately they went, after the 40 minutes meeting with the junta, it was a very short meeting actually, and a return trip meeting. From there, they went to the palace of Mohammed V in Center Town, where President Alpha Conde is being imprisoned, and we are also at the back of that particular building where we have the junta leader living. So they met with President Alpha Conde. According to the Ghanaian president, President Alpha Conde is in a very good shape. And then they spoke to him and they said they have hope with the juntas. They will definitely get to a point of understanding. That was what they said to us.
I understand lawyers in the country, the Guinean Bar Association, is calling on the military junta to name all the officers involved in the coup, basically to name its government and to declare who was part of the coup. Do you foresee this happening, and what has been the reaction of the military junta so far about this call from the Guinean Bar Association?
Well, I think when the lawyer, the head of the baton in the lawyer, lawyer Traoré, said that the juntas would give their list, I think this was the time, as I said previously, this was the time when the junta says they want to meet with the Guinean media. The lawyers asking the junta, I mean, it's 2 weeks now since you've taken power. We haven't heard of anybody, any name of any person, only Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya. So he's the only man's name. Although other names are coming in, like the former ambassador to Italy who is in Guinea, General Idi Amin, is here, and maybe he's part of the government. But up to now, for the past 2 weeks, I mean, this is breaking down among ordinary Guineans. Who are the coup leaders? It's only Doumbouya. So this is the problem. So now, the juntas want to meet the media. The lawyers are asking for this. So maybe because of the pressure now coming from the judiciary or from the association of the lawyers, maybe this will make the military to name their counsel.
Aziz Ba is an independent journalist in Guinea. He spoke with me from the capital, Conakry. The Netherlands, a Washington, D.C.-based human rights group, has officially petitioned the International Criminal Court, or ICC, to investigate human rights violations by Nigerian security forces in parts of the West African country. BW Global Group LLC, a human rights and government accountability advocacy firm, says it has documented compelling evidence that show gross human rights abuses committed by government troops in Nigeria. This, as U.S. Congressman Chris Smith, a ranking member of the House Foreign Affairs Africa Committee, called on the international community to do more to stop the violence, adding that the people of Nigeria deserve to live in peace and their human rights protected. Dr. Alan White is partner of BW Global Group LLC in Washington, D.C. The organization works with other groups to promote human rights and seeks justice and accountability for victims of gross human rights violations and crimes against humanity. He tells me that the ICC must assume its responsibilities and investigate what he says are ongoing human rights abuses in Nigeria.
It's been clear since we've been involved in this that the atrocities are occurring daily, and we've been able to document those atrocities and are absolutely gruesome. And we have been able to identify specific locations, specific incidents. So having been able to collect that information professionally, succinctly, you know, I've been doing this for 40 years, and it was a package of information that we were put together that we felt strong enough to make an initial referral, and we'll continue to provide additional information. But we felt compelled to do it, particularly in light of the recent illegal abduction of the leader, Mazi Namde Kanu.
But do you think the evidence you have will be compelling enough that the prosecutor, the International Criminal Court, will refer this case for possible investigation?
Yes, we feel that, again, based on our experience of doing this for a significant amount of time, you know, I was the chief of investigations for the Special Court for Sierra Leone that led the investigations that led to the indictment and successful conviction of Charles Taylor and the others. So we know what the evidence is that we need to collect. We know it has to be credible, it has to be reliable, and there needs to be a chain of custody, and all of that has been established. So we did provide a confidential referral to the Office of the Prosecutor, which was received and acknowledged yesterday, and we will continue to work with them and provide them information as it becomes available.
The Nigerian government has described IPOB, the organization that you represent or your organization represent, as a terrorist organization, and that they have been fomenting trouble, attacking police and other security agencies in Nigeria. They are saying that supporting them and taking this matter to the International Criminal Court basically interferes in the government effort to maintain law and order and to protect its people as constitutionally mandated. How do you respond to that?
Well, we would vehemently object to that, because the only people that consider the IPOB as terrorist is Nigeria. And as a matter of fact, on April 20th of this year, the United Kingdom Visa and Immigration Office designated them as a group of people that were being persecuted, and as a result, they could seek asylum. So they were designated specifically by that group. The UN, the US, the European Union, nobody acknowledges them as a terrorist organization. Matter of fact, we have been told by people that work at the UN that have been over there that they were the largest and most vocal opposition. And let's be clear about this. If you were being killed and slaughtered every day by members of your own government, why wouldn't you want to separate? And why wouldn't you want to have some sort of level of security?
If the International Criminal Court decides not to take up this case, are there any other avenues to seek redress?
Well, we'll certainly seek whatever redress is available to us. This is one that's immediately available to us. And keep in mind, the Office of the Prosecutor did, in fact, conduct a preliminary examination and close that report out in December of 2019 or 2020. And in that report, they did find that there were crimes against humanity that were being committed not only by Boko Haram, but also by Nigerian security forces. So that's what their job is. And nobody's above the law. And the fact that Nigeria is a signatory to the Rome Statute, and they are not taking action against these people or stopping it, matter of fact, they're complicit, then the International Criminal Court is a court of last resort. And if the country that's involved is not taking care of the problem or cannot police itself, then the ICC must do it. And we are there to support and help them in seeking justice for the IPO members.
After the ICC officially acknowledged receipt of your petition, what's next for you and what's next for the process moving forward?
Well, they will continue to evaluate it and assess it. And we think it's rather compelling. And hopefully the next step is that they will formally open an investigation. And meanwhile, we will continue to provide information to support their efforts. And again, we'll seek support elsewhere. We'll be seeking support from the British government. We'll be seeking support certainly over in the U.S. and also the U.N. organizations, to include the European Union. The European Union is right now heavily engaged in sanctioning countries and heads of state or governments that engage in human rights violations and corruption. And unfortunately, we have both ongoing there right now.
Dr. Alan White is partner of BL Global Group, LLC. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, opposition leader Martin Fayulu says he plans to organize fresh protests this week to demand election reforms. The reforms, he says, must include an independent electoral body that will administer free, transparent, and credible future elections. The opposition leader is also demanding an independent inquiry into what he says was brutal force used by security agencies to stop a rally he called for last week. Local media report over 30 arrests and more than 20 of the opposition leader's supporters were injured as security forces dispersed the crowd at the rally. Fayulu was defeated by President Felix Tshisekedi in the 2018 election. He rejected the outcome of the polls, citing voter irregularities and rigging. For more about his call for fresh protests to demand electoral reforms and an independent investigation into the use of force by the security agencies, I reached Congolese opposition leader Martin Fayulu in the capital, Kinshasa.
We want a neutral and independent investigation to find out who are those guys, because they beat people, they beat demonstrators, they stole money to anybody, including the ladies. It was really, really terrible. The brutality, the violence was totally unacceptable. That's why we really think that we need an investigation.
The democratic reforms that you are seeking, how realistic are they? And why do you think that would make any impact in ensuring transparency during the next elections?
You know, everywhere you have to see what you have and see how you can improve yourself. We went to the election on 2018, and that was a really fraud. The election results were not that of the Congolese wanted, or what they have decided. What we need is to sit down together and to see how can we have a really independent electoral commission. How can we improve in terms of electoral law? What innovation, what did the change should we make so the election will be really credible? You know, and I think that if all the stakeholders meet together and discuss, we can have something that we can, agree on it.
But in June, the National Assembly passed an amendment that the government says was key to strengthening the independence of the Electoral Commission. Why do you think this is not enough?
The National Assembly has not the support of the Congolese population. That assembly, National Assembly, the guy sitting there, they were nominated by Mr. Kabila. And after that, Mr. Tshisekedi bought them, and now they are under him. They are speaking the same language. And we are saying that the law regarding the Electoral Commission should be agreed among the stakeholders. All stakeholders, we have to sit down and make sure that all of us, we have agreed, and so we can send the law to the parliament, and then the parliament will take it as a law. But if you have only Tshisekedi voice, things cannot work. Or today, why we are not having the Electoral Commission members or bureaus and so on? Because just nobody has accepted that law. Nobody has accepted the way they set up the bureau of the Electoral Commission.
If the investigation that you are calling for doesn't happen, what's next for you?
No, we need the investigation. You know, we cannot say that it cannot happen. And because you cannot let one man making his show and misbehaving and not respecting the constitution, and then you leave him there. But what we will do, we'll continue to demonstrate. He continues to demonstrate this is the way to express yourself in democracy. We have to speak out, and we have to be on the street. That we will continue. That's why we are calling for the next rally on the Wednesday, 29 of September.
Martin Fayulu is a leading opposition figure in the Democratic Republic of Congo. He spoke with me from the capital, Kinshasa. In New York, groups from Mauritania, Senegal, and France plan a protest near the United Nations headquarters beginning Monday. The groups, calling themselves survivors of human rights abuses in Mauritania and their families, say they will present a petition to UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. They seek to protest the appointment of Mauritania Army General Eli Zaid Ould Mbarek as the chief of the Joint Task Force for the Central African Republic, or CAR. They accuse the top army official of being unfit to serve within the UN systems, contending that he played a major role in human rights violations in Mauritania. They also say the petition contains a compilation of evidence provided by victims of the rights violations. But critics dismiss the planned protest, saying it appears to be orchestrated by disgruntled Mauritanian opposition leaders to tarnish the image of a highly decorated army general who is well respected back home. They contend that General Ould Mbarek has never been convicted of any crime such as human rights abuses, which they argue could be a key reason why he was appointed to help bring peace to the CAR. Bakary Tandian is a major proponent of the planned protest. He tells me that the UN must reconsider General Ould Mbarek's appointment following several testimonials alleging his involvement in human rights violations in Mauritania.
This rally is about protesting against injustice and impunity in Mauritania. So the reason, the particular reason for this rally is to protest against the appointment of General Eli Zaid Ould Mbarek as a chief of the Joint Task Force for Bangui in Central African Republic. General Zaid, in our view, is unfit for that mission because of his participation in serious human rights violations in Mauritania. There are strong allegations against him, substantiated by overwhelming testimonies by victims who survived. So currently, this is organized by the coordination of survivors of torture and the families of victims here in the U.S., in France, in Dakar, and in Mauritania.
Who are you going to submit your petition to?
We have a letter for the UN General Secretary to bring this to his attention. He's already informed about the situation because the office of UN High Commissioner of Human Rights in Mauritania has already reached to victims to collect testimonies. I know personally three former army members, Abdul Aziz Soumaré, Boubou Njim, and Ibrahim Ngaide, who testified. They suffered directly, without any question, from the act of torture of General Zaid.
Bakary, some people are saying these are allegations. He has not been court-martialed. He has not been prosecuted. And that what you are doing really is tarnishing the image of Mauritania abroad. How do you respond to that?
Those facts occurred. It is a reality. The proof of that is that in 1993, the government of Mauritania orchestrated an amnesty law to protect the criminal from any prosecution. So if no crimes had been committed, why to pass an amnesty law to protect the perpetrators? This is a fact. The individuals I am talking about, Abdul Aziz Soumaré, Boubou Njim, and Ibrahim Gaide, I know them personally. They testify. They cannot make up, those allegations. It is the reality. At least consideration should have been given, to them. And whenever in the UN system, UN is meant to promote peace, security, human rights, the rule of law. Anyone who is appointed to serve, the UN mission should be a clean person. No doubt, should be, should cloud, the image of the person, because it is a very important mission, especially in this context. The person will be working for the peacekeeping mission in Bangui.
Bakary Tandian is a major proponent of the planned protest. He spoke with me from New York. This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music from our African collection. But first, former Algerian President Abdelaziz Bouteflika has died at age 54. Bouteflika, who fought for independence from France, reconciled his conflict-ravaged nation and was then ousted amid pro-democracy protests in 2019 after 2 decades in power. A statement from the office of current President Abdel Majid Tebboune did not disclose the cause of death or information about funeral arrangements. Bouteflika had suffered a stroke in 2013 that left him badly weakened. Concerns about his state of health, kept secret from the Algerian public, helped fuel public frustration with his 20-year rule. An astute political chameleon, Bouteflika was known as a wily survivor of colonial and post-colonial politics. In Tunisia, President Kais Saied says he is undeterred in his commitment to fighting corruption. He adds that the previous administration ran the North African country like the mafia and vowed not to hold talks with former officials who he calls thieves. His comments came during a meeting with constitutional law scholars in the capital, Tunis. It also comes as political parties pressure him to name a government and outline plans to normalize the political situation in the country. Citing constitutional powers on July 25th, the president fired the prime minister, suspended parliament, and stripped lawmakers of their immunity in a move analysts say has been welcomed by a majority of the population. But critics condemn the president's action as a power grab. They also accuse the president of failing to outline specific policies he plans to use to fight corruption. For the latest development, I reach Sherif El Khadi, a political commentator based in the Tunisian capital, Tunis.
The last statements of President Saied said that the previously say government was ruled by some sort of mafia or some sort of lobbies that were in control and forcing the vote of certain bills or certain laws, even sometimes with financial financial incentives and corruption. These were the statements of Kais Saied even before July 25th. He is the guy opposing the corrupt elite, the corrupt political parties, the corrupt parliament. But this time it's more obvious and in a more direct speech. This is a large part of the population. They do agree with him. If tomorrow the presidential election has to be had, he would win by a landslide, maybe from the first round.
He also promised to fight corruption, but has he outlined any measures or policies by which he will go by in fighting corruption in Tunisia?
The only measure he's always speaking about is the rule of law. But he does not provide the population and even the journalists with a specific plan or program. Not only concerning fighting corruption, but the next steps when it comes to the constitutional process, when it comes to the political process and the electoral process.
President Saied has yet to appoint a new government or reveal a roadmap towards normalization.
despite repeated demands by political parties. Do you foresee him naming a new government soon? Because he promised to name a government soon. What is causing the delay?
What is causing the delay? We don't have any, let's say, official explanation, except the one he gave 2 days ago in his last speech when he met with constitutional law scholars, saying that I'm not going to appoint a government for the sake of appointing government. What about the programs? Because for Qais Saied, the main issue by appointing a government is to appoint a government that has the programs able to get Tunisia out of the crisis, the political crisis, the economic crisis, and the social one. The delays are, for some analysts, caused by the fact that people who are asked to be on the position of prime minister are simply refusing because it's really tough to be prime minister these days in Tunisia, unfortunately, due to the deep economic, political, and social crisis. And also to the fact that maybe there is an issue with Qais Saied, an issue of trust between him and all the other political elites, because for sure he would have to look for a prime minister in this political elite.
I understand that the Tunisian media is speculating that perhaps President Saied might announce a provisional government that will be followed by a revision of the constitution to be submitted to a national referendum before holding parliamentary or legislative elections. Is this what you are seeing or hearing on the ground in the streets of Tunis and other parts of the country?
This is what we are even waiting for from at least the president and the presidency, because these are the positions of Qais Saied even before July 25th. If we follow the statements and the positions of Qais Saied, is in favor of amending the constitutions or a part of it, amending the political system, how the, let's say, check and balances of the powers are made or are in place in Tunisia. He is in favor of a bottom-up democracy with a strong central government led by the president. So maybe we would see from the presidency in the next days or weeks a proposal to amend the constitution, the political system via referendum, and then having anticipated or new parliamentary and presidential elections.
Sherif El Khadi is a Tunisian political commentator. He spoke with me from the capital, Tunis. The World Health Organization is warning that COVID-19 vaccine export ban and hoarding by wealthy countries will prolong the pandemic in Africa, preventing recovery from the disease in the rest of the world. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
While more than 60% of the U.S., European Union, and British populations have been vaccinated, only 2% of COVID vaccine shots have been given in Africa. The COVAX facility has slashed its planned COVID-19 vaccine deliveries to Africa by 25% this year. World Health Organization Africa Regional Director Matshidiso Moeti says the 470 million doses now expected to arrive by the end of September are enough to vaccinate just 17% of Africans on the continent.
Export bans and vaccine hoarding still have a chokehold on the lifeline of vaccine supplies to Africa. Even if all planned shipments via COVAX and the African Union arrive, Africa still needs almost 500 million more doses to reach the year-end goal. At this rate, the continent may only reach the 40% target by the end of March next year.
WHO reports more than 8 million cases of COVID-19 in Africa, including more than 200,000 deaths. 44 African countries have reported the Alpha variant, and 32 countries have reported the more virulent and contagious Delta variant. Moeti warns of further waves of infection and loss of life in this pandemic. Given the short supply of vaccines, she urges strict adherence to preventive measures such as mask wearing and social distancing. She reiterates WHO's call for a halt to booster shots in wealthy nations, except for those with compromised immune systems and at risk of severe illness and death.
I've said many times that it's in everyone's interest to make sure the most at-risk groups in every country are protected. As it stands, the huge gaps in vaccine equity is not closing anywhere near fast enough. The quickest way to end this pandemic is for countries with reserves to release their doses so that other countries can buy them.
Moeti says African countries with low vaccination rates are breeding grounds for vaccine-resistant variants. She warns this could end up sending the world back to square one. She says the pandemic will continue to ravage communities worldwide if vaccine inequity continues. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Let's start Nairobi, Kenya, with highlights at the Keep Kaino Classic World Athletics Continental Tour meet. American Trayvon Bromell, who already had the world's fastest 100 meters in the bag, bettered his own mark with a 9.76-second finish. New Kenyan sprint sensation Ferdinand Omanyala came second with 9.77 seconds, the time Bromell had run in April. The 2004 Olympic champion American Justin Gatlin had to settle for third. The 39-year-old, who had been banned twice for doping, failed to qualify for this year's Tokyo Games and was hoping to do better in Kenya. For many of the athletes competing, Nairobi was a climax to a long, drawn-out season, which included the Olympics and the Diamond League. Namibia's sprint sensation Christian Mboma won her seventh 200-meters race since Tokyo, where she was forced to switch to the shorter distance after being ruled ineligible to compete in the 400 meters due to increased levels of testosterone. Ivory Coast's Marie Jose came second. American Fred Kelly won the men's 200 meters in a personal best of 19.76 seconds, leading second-placed Isaac Mwakwala of Botswana, who clocked 20.06 seconds. In women's football, South Africa beat Ghana 3-0 in their Aisha Buhari Cup campaign in Lagos on Friday. The win at the Mobalaji Johnson Arena was Banyana Banyana's first win since November 2018 when they beat the Black Queens in the African Women's Cup of Nations. Next, South Africa take on Cameroon, who lost 1-0 to Morocco on September 20th. In rugby, Australia beat world champion South Africa 30-17 in Brisbane. New Zealand reclaimed top spot in the world rankings after beating Argentina. The All Blacks are now 10 points clear in the rugby championship table, having won all four of their games, while Australia move up to third, 1 point behind South Africa. New Zealand's win saw them leapfrog the Springboks into top spot prior to them meeting this week. And former Kenyan Sports Minister Hassan Wario was on Wednesday found guilty by the Kenyan Anti-Corruption Magistrates Court for misusing public funds allocated to the National Olympic Committee of Kenya for the Rio Olympics Games. On Thursday, Wario paid a fine of $33,000 to avoid a 6-year jail sentence. Kenya won the most medals of any African nation in Brazil, but were beset by scandals. Athletes did not receive their Nike kits, while some of them were stranded in a Rio shanty town. Another Kenyan Olympic Committee official, Stephen Soy, who was Kenya's chief demission for the 2016 Olympics, was convicted on 5 charges of corruption. Both men have always denied any wrongdoing. And that's about it for this edition of Netland Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Now that ECOWAS at the presidential level has engaged with the two coup leaders in Guinea, it is time to review where we are at the moment. It would seem that the exchange of views thus far has not resulted in an equitable solution. We know that ECOWAS, in accordance with its tradition and practice, has suspended Guinea and had requested African Union to do the same. Those things have been complied with. Secondly, ECOWAS has imposed targeted sanctions on those with greater responsibility for organizing the coup d'etat. We also know that the coup makers have thus far kept their promise not to engage in a witch hunt. They have ensured that President Conde is safe and sound. They have asked the mining and business communities to proceed, and it would appear that the people of Guinea are cautiously waiting to see what the coup leaders will do. Thus far, reports say they are pleased that all the ministers of President Conde have been allowed to return home to their families after surrendering their passports. The question is two critical points. ECOWAS wanted the immediate release of President Conde. In fact, in the missions which have been sent by ECOWAS, they had expected to take with them President Conde. The coup leaders are opposed to this. According to reports, they are demanding that President Conde should first resign before he could be released to ECOWAS representatives. Secondly, the reports say that ECOWAS wanted a short transition of about 6 months. Although the coup leaders themselves have not pronounced on the issue of the time limit for any transition, the political parties that have been consulted by the coup leaders are urging a longer transition period to sort out the constitution and all arrangements for election to civilian rule. But these two sticking points seems to hold grave danger for the continuing discussion between the two parties. ECOWAS has a long tradition stretching for two decades on how to work out details on such transition. So what is required now is maximum restraint to avoid a shouting match between ECOWAS and the coup leaders. Special attention must be paid to fears that some may regard the approach of ECOWAS to either a diplomatic blackmail or bullying or conventional lecturing. ECOWAS, from all experience, could do more. For example, at the time of Liberia, when ECOWAS was formulating conditions for traditional period to election, ECOWAS discussed fully not only with religious and political leaders, but later with all social groups in Liberia. And these discussions enabled ECOWAS to arrange a successful transition in Liberia to civilian rule. This could be done again. And because failure may result in greater sanctions, and these sanctions might result in turmoil within Guinea, and then the neighboring states of Guinea might begin to have the effect, perhaps, to outflow of refugees. So this is the time for reflection, and hopefully ECOWAS will continue some degree of mutual understanding so that the subcontinent can be spared a greater turmoil for the future. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Yeah. Everybody come, make you follow me, go. Make you follow me, they feel the rhythm. Say, you know, I'm capable, oh. I am capable in every season. Make you dance and feel the flow. Make you drink and party with me. When the baby don't start to play. Say, you know, I'm the melody key.
Anything you need, I got ya. And don't do free.
What you feeling inside you, you got to let me know. Say what I'm feeling inside me, I got to let it show. And you know, when they see apa, I know they see nothing. And you know, when they see apa, I know they see person. I want you to dance, go. Yeah, I want you to dance, go. Yeah, I want you to move.
Nothing like on down, the intention not to paint the town brown. Style and class, now have a one sheet. Anybody come come for here, they know the drill. Hey, oh yeah, make it cheap. For real.
I'm not a jolly, nine matter.
And don't do be, oh yeah, I'm bad.
So baby, scare, baby, come closer.
Cause I don't bite, cause any question you got, I got the answer.
What you feeling inside you, you got to let me know. Say what I'm feeling inside me, I got to let it show. And you know, when they see apa, I know they see nothing. And you know, when I see apa, I know they see person.
Hey,
I want you to dance, go.
to worry, baby. Welcome to my party, party. Get it, get it, station, station. Money, money, daddy, daddy. Oh, yeah. Move it to position, position. Spray us all this money. That's it with my honey. Ready money, way, way. Ready money, way, way. God of God.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor William Eagle, Reporter Douglas Impuga, and Producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, all lizards lie on their bellies, but nobody knows which of them suffers stomach ache. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.